Talk with Frederick Douglass in today's broadcast, as brought to us by John Anderson, his portrayal of this historic figure. And then in the second hour, Atira Charles, professor at FAMU, a life coach, business coach, talking about personal development. Stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now over 75 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 75 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com. So here we are, my friend, once again with opportunity to have conversations with people that have something to say about our town and how our town is a contribution then to many towns and this country at large. So it happens. Tallahassee is a lot more than perhaps we realize. Those of us who have lived here for many years, some of you who grew up here, there's good and bad to that from my humble point of view. It's easy for us to become sort of too comfortable, I would say, in a sort of generous way of saying it. And there have been greater efforts made in the last, I don't know, 5-10 years. Of course, during a year when an election is upon us, the primary being in August, and you have a number of these local races coming up, commissioners and candidates coming to us in greater number than at least that I recall. So it brings to question then more strongly, what are we doing for one another? What is local government doing to serve the best interests of all of us? So here's this little mantra that I've given you, in which I try to push aside political philosophy, as it's, I suppose, best referred to, or party politics, because at this level, my interest is, maybe yours is, how are we best serving one another? I mean, let's just come right down to it, that we are the government. And whatever government we consider, it's us. And those who represent us then are to operate with our interests at heart. And when we find that there are, you know, people that are not being cared for, represented as well, or there's a kind of disparity then between those who are provided for and those who are not, well, that should bother us. I mean, because that's just not how we choose to live our lives. I mean, some people do, but in the main, especially Tallahassee, has this sort of big-minded, big-hearted approach to life that everybody is invited and everybody should be benefited by whatever means we have at our disposal, whether those are tax dollars that have been apportioned for certain causes and projects, or if it's the recognition, the celebration of ideas and people and historic achievements. So Juneteenth is that has been established now at the federal level and well celebrated across the country. Of course, it's tied to June 19th because of the revelation, the announcement in Texas. You know, this is long after the declaration, that is to say the Emancipation Proclamation. In fact, well after a lot of achievement that occurred during that period of time, President Lincoln and Civil War outcomes. But in that recognition then, there was this effort to say, we are no longer as a nation going to tolerate slavery of any kind for anyone. And yet to work that out, to play that out through public policy, through voting rights, through the apportionment of privileges, frankly. I mean, do any of us need a lesson in the devastating consequences of segregation? I don't think so. I hope not. I think have we not grown up to the point where we can say, you know, that was not a good idea. It's still not a good idea. And there are a lot of ideas out there that I think are not good for us. And one of those comes back to this business of how we best determine what is good. So again, this little mantra that I've given you to say, what is that position, that policy, that action that will generate the greatest good? Okay, well, that's a subjective notion right there, isn't there? So what is considered good? The greatest good. Okay, well, can we reduce that down to a sort of Maslowian appreciation? There's a hierarchy of need for all of us. Seems to me food and shelter are right down there at ground level, right? And then beyond that, those other needs that we have. And from those basic ideas of what human beings need in order to carry on and care for one another, well, you have to make sure that you're addressing the greatest good in those terms. So that seems to be easy enough for us to agree on. Then comes for the greatest number of people. So the greatest good for the greatest number of people. Okay, well, that's mathematics. That's pretty easy. So how many people are going to benefit from this decision, this policy, this position we've taken? And however that gets played out, whether it's the apportionment of funds, tax dollars, grants, yeah. Or, again, the recognition of, the celebration of, the cultural contributions, yeah. The contributions of those who are representative of various communities within our community. Right. And so it happens that I think when we have an opportunity to say, let's celebrate the ongoing quest for freedom. Isn't that a good thing? Shouldn't we at all times, in any way we can, continue to chant that notion that for the greatest good to occur, for the greatest number of people, freedom and respect for individual thinking has to be at its core. If that's not the case, then this whole business of freedom of speech is such a sort of a sort of greeting card kind of slogan. You know, we say this, but well, we don't really believe it. So it's okay for me to speak freely, but not for you to speak freely. Well, in that case, if we've agreed at that level, then that's a good question. Are we agreed? But then the next question is for the greatest period of time. So the greatest good for the greatest number of people over the greatest period of time. How sustainable is it to make this particular decision? If we enact a law or an ordinance that has a limited lifespan, I started to say shelf life, but if it's narrow in its scope, well, okay. So these days, we're talking at length about housing for those in our community who have always found housing to be unaffordable, to find the ability to provide for one another and for their families, remarkably, tragically challenging. And so we're going to continue that questioning, and we're going to keep the topic moving forward, because in the weeks ahead, we've invited a number of people to come and talk with us about affordable housing in Tallahassee. So it's on the agenda in those opportunities we have for coming broadcasts. Hope that you will continue to be a part of it, even as you are today. So stay with me, folks. We've got John Anderson talking with us here in the character of Frederick Douglass.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
So here we are, my dear friends. We have a great opportunity to talk with John Anderson, who is a local actor and educator. And he's done so many things. We're going to get to know him in the remaining portion of today's show. John, how are you?
I go well. Thank you, sir.
You have an interesting background. I know that includes various professional experiences and mental health counseling and sociology and these kinds of things. And you've done some work or are working with the Tallahassee Democrat over there. So we just wanted to get to know you a little bit and then have you speak to us about your portrayal then of Frederick Douglass. How all of that got started for you? Can you give me some insight there?
Well, okay. You mean first about my career?
Yeah, how did you get going with doing Frederick Douglass? Let's start there. How did that all start for you?
Well, actually, I'm one of several characters. Not every one of them went as forward as I did, but I met my mother's son, and she is a retired media specialist, an old vernacular librarian.
Okay.
And she taught in an elementary school and went on to get a master's degree later. But she got an interest in doing our family history, genealogy. Right. And it just so happens that if you happen to be an African American, you can only go back so far before you run headlong into slavery.
Yeah.
Problem with that is slaves were not citizens, and so there are no county records, no birth certificates, and so the only way to try to surmise who your ancestors were is to learn something about the way they managed slaves, and who owned who and who bought who. And when they made their list of slaves that were owned here and there, they would list the children of the women. And sometimes they list a so-called husband, because none of that was actually valid, because slaves didn't have any citizens' rights and any of that. But if you could follow the names of the offspring and then try to keep up with who sold who, because masters, just sold away slaves depending on who they needed or what they needed and when or the circumstances, with no regard to family ties whatsoever. So it's almost a turkey shoot trying to follow your people, and you're lucky. But anyway, the answer to what happened was my mother also had dissatisfaction as an educator that the history of black people hadn't been adequately covered due to prejudice and neglect and misunderstanding of the importance of black people in the history of our nation. So she set out to do something about that. And that's where the teaching philosophy sort of came
interesting.
In.
Interesting, yeah.
And so she got fascinated with the contribution of black people, slave and free, to the history during the Civil War era of my country.
Okay.
And she gathered a group of individuals to portray various individuals that she had learned about and began to put on programs in schools and in community centers and at community festivals, like the old Lusty Battle Festival and Natural Bridge here. And I'm Frederick Douglass.
Yeah.
And I grew my hair long, and so I was a shoe-in for that. But I happened to learn a lot about him and found that the more I learned, the more I actually really felt like I understood and could relate to that
guy. Getting into the role, yeah.
So it really worked out, and I'm really pleased with, well, I shouldn't say pleased, delighted that my mom got me started, because it turned out to be really rewarding for me.
We were at the Village Square forum here about a week or so ago, precisely aimed at this discussion of race relations. Neil Phillips was the guest speaker, an educator from Bradenton who operates this Visible Men Academy. Well, he opened the program that evening by making some rather bold statements, and I wanted to share one of these with you. It says that America's existence is tied to an untruth, and that being that this declaration that all men are created equal, he says, well, that's really not true. It wasn't true then, even though they said it, and it's not true now. How would you respond to that?
Oh, yeah, I got a big response to that. Mm-hmm. One of the things I was grateful for is being able to learn a lot about humanity and civilization as I was studying the history of the, you know, United States during the Civil War era, not just through the eyes of Frederick Douglass from reading his books, but also learning more about what was going on politically and socially at the time, which helps me to bring it all together. One of the first things I say to people is that we may not, absolutely may not, make too many direct analogies or comparisons or explanations from 250 years ago, or even 150 years ago, to current circumstances. But specifically to address, you know, the remark you just made, you know, racism. Civilization evolves over time. Women's rights. Women didn't get the vote to 1920. How absurd is that? Okay? But it does speak to the progress of man. And one of the things that determines that is man's basic understanding of the natural world around him. So when it comes to racism in particular, equality, well, you know, everybody knows what stupid means. Okay, what it means is there's no logic to it. You when we talk about why a person doesn't like a person of a certain race or a certain skin color, a certain religion, they can't tell you why. It's stupid. But it is prudent of us to recognize that these feelings do exist, and they do affect people's behavior, and they do affect philosophical motives and society in general. Okay, so back to this guy and what he said. There's always been the idea throughout civilized man, throughout time, throughout various cultures all around the world, that some particular ethnic group will claim the notion that their group somehow is more fit to be human than other groups. We're not created equal according to the way history went in the history of the United States.
If men means all humans, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that. But in the context of his discussion about the plight of young black men in today's society, he was trying to offer some excuse for the present condition of African Americans, and there's some validity to it, but I would never say it the way he said it. So it's a very complicated situation that cannot be addressed by simple cliche expressions that just get people all upset.
Right, right.
And that's the fault I find with the gentleman's approach, if I understood, you know, what you were saying.
At the same time, you bring to us this historical perspective from the viewpoint of Frederick Douglass. Folks, okay. We're talking with John Anderson. He portrays Frederick Douglass in various settings for educational purposes here around Tallahassee. We're going to continue our conversation right after this. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with me.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers' spacious showroom, conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we're back. We're talking with John Anderson, who is known locally for his portrayal of Frederick Douglass. We've talked a little bit about the history of race relations, especially racism as a cultural challenge, and it remains a challenge in our time. If Frederick Douglass were here talking with us, and we were to say, all men are created equal, what might Frederick Douglass say to us about that?
I know not, sir, that your remarks are entirely accurate. I would reflect upon you the conditions of our Constitution, where our nation was founded upon the idea that all men are created equal. However, in the activities of man, we see that such is certainly not the case. For the dispositions of those in various aspects of our society would indicate that the necessities of various peoples here are dictated by the philosophical and economic and political motives of those that are in power, sir. Namely, those that find themselves in bondage are there simply because they are those that insist that these people be held in this condition for the purpose of their own financial benefits, sir, and those that are in charge of the political affairs that allow such a phenomena indeed go out of their ways, sir, to maintain this power, the slave power, as it is colloquially recognized as, and such this inequality in man that you'd recognize is thus justified by our present circumstances as a nation, sir.
You've taken it upon yourself, Mr. Douglass, as an abolitionist, to champion the cause of black people in our country. In doing so, you've put yourself at some risk, and I'm just curious, how do you see yourself in the role that you've occupied now for some time? Do you ever find yourself concerned about your own personal welfare?
Indeed, sir. I need not question the possibility of danger upon my own person, for I have experienced such danger, which began even as a slave, sir. As in the slave system, it is necessary that the slave owners maintain the idea that the slave is not to consider himself worthy of anything but the condition of being a slave, and such an idea is enforced by the lash, sir.
We find ourselves in the midst of this civil war. We are working to try and preserve the nation. Do you have hope for us?
Indeed, sir. If we did not have hope, there would be no motivation whatsoever for participation in this war. we are blessed for the ideas of Abraham Lincoln, who proceeded on the notion that the original Union, as it was conceived by our forefathers in the Revolution, is to prevail. However, he finds himself at war because those that ventured to begin the Confederate States of America believe otherwise, that the Constitution and the original principles of our forefathers do in fact allow the independence of those states who would believe that the federal government as it stands does not serve their best interests. Such is the rationale for the formation of these Confederate states. So indeed, it would be most prudent of me to increase my efforts in order to gain the support and participation of those that might bring about Union victory, such that we may gain haste towards this end of victory. And we pray that Abraham Lincoln would find the support and that he needs in this nation, and God willing, sir, we shall find this salvation.
Our friend John Anderson, who has joined us here this morning, folks, you are having this wonderful treat in which John is presenting for us the character of Frederick Douglass. You know, and we talked in the earlier segment about the devastation that slavery brought to this people, but what you pointed to was something even more insidious, and that was the devastation of identity as a people. So the fact that they were not recognized as people, as human beings, they were not citizens, therefore, meant there are no records. So then the identity of a people itself is attacked or is damaged or even perhaps irreparable in many ways. That to me seems to be even more or as injurious. So when you think back through that history and think, well, where were these folks before this all came about? It's difficult to know.
Okay.
You follow my logic there?
Yeah, but you're going in a direction that I wouldn't let you go.
Oh, it's Set me straight.
Yeah, I'll do that happily, sir. Remember, in the first segment, I talked about civilization.
All right.
The evolution of civilization. And what you were doing a moment ago is something that you can't do. We shall not try to make analogies to from the past to try to explain what's happening now. You get in trouble when you do that. What you have to do is recognize that the ills in society, the ills in civilization from 150, 200, 200 years ago were solely due to the lack of enlightenment of the human beings that lived on this third rock from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Abraham Lincoln, fortunately for us, was correct. He was courageous in that he saw fit to take what was left of the Union to war to put down a Confederate rebellion. The South did not set out to destroy the Union. So when we talk about the Union going to war, or Abraham Lincoln and the Federals going to war to save the Union, not save Negroes, incidentally, but to save the Union, would have those that are enthusiastic about Confederate history, and I kind of wanted to address that too, to say that they set out to destroy the Union, and that would be a terrible injustice. They did not. They set out to gain their independence from a Union or a federal government that they truly did not believe had their best interests in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Their way of life, their philosophies, their view on life, including slavery, of course, they considered in contradiction to what the direction that the Union was going, and they did not see the federal government as their friend.
Mm-hmm.
So they left, and they thought at the time that they had a right to do so. And we can go on and on about whether or not their legal right was legitimate, but it was unprecedented for sure, and they did it. And what Lincoln did is went to war to say, no, my concept of a nation is the original nation conceived by our forefathers. Whatever internal domestic problems we have, including slavery, we're better off resolving those as one nation. Mm. And that's what he went to war to bring about, the restoring of the original union, and we'll solve our problems together as a nation. Because he had to think about the big picture. He had to think about, we were only like 70-some years old at the time. We were not the strongest nation state on the planet.
Right.
There were imperial philosophies and aggressions in Europe. People like Spain and England and France and Portugal, they would come over and undo everything we accomplished in the revolution. And we would simply be a natural resource for those imperial nations. And that is what Lincoln had to think about. And so he fought to put this country back together. And thankfully, we can see that we're the nation that we are today because he was right.
Talking with John Anderson, known for his portrayal of Frederick Douglass, you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hello, brothers and sisters in Radio Land. This is blues guitarist Jerry Thigpen. Don't you move, because this is Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are. We've got John Anderson with us, folks, if you've just joined us. This ongoing challenge of race relations. You know, John, we, in our time, we find ourselves continuing to try to resolve and work through, and we see violence erupt. We see angry debates about things like the Confederate flag. Where are you on that particular issue?
This is what you have to understand about the Confederate flag from Frederick Douglass's point of view, as well as John Anderson's. Okay, I'm going to do all that for you. Slavery had existed for over 250 years before the beginning of the Civil War. The very first slaves came over here and to Jamestown, Virginia in 1619, along with indentured servants. But even then, we weren't even a nation. So slavery and indentured servitude was a part of civilization at that time in terms of the way people think about other people and what conditions they can tolerate and so on, or impose on others. So that was where civilization was. And we weren't even a nation. The reason why slavery persisted in the South, and it was all over the nation at the beginning, is because they needed a permanent, reliable workforce, because it turns out that the southern regions of the United States made real big on agricultural production, namely tobacco, cotton, rice, sugar, and so on. Not only that, this industrial production of these agricultural commodities was 60% of the gross national product of this fledgling young nation by the time of the Civil War. So the whole country depended on this free labor and the industry that came from it. The idea that you would hold these people in this condition, well, that's addressed by the issue of civilization. Mm-hmm. But the immediate needs for this country's development was totally dependent on slavery, and it wasn't just the South. Mm-hmm. That's just where the dirt was that grew the cotton.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So then, so what happens is, because of the need to develop this country, because of the Mexican War, we acquired some new territories. We weren't a whole continental United States at the time.
Sure.
Okay. So what happens is, we got all this territory. There's nothing but Indians and buffaloes, prairie, right? Americans being Americans want to expand west towards the Pacific Ocean. What was in contention at the time of the Civil War was how the country would grow and develop. Will we be a nation of slave states, whereas the slave power or those that were in political support of slavery would dominate the federal government? Or would the people that were free soilers, the non-slaveholding states, be able to compete with new territories where the economy and all the industry were dominated by wealthy slave owners that had all this free labor at their disposal? In other words, mm-hmm. Kansas, Nebraska, mm-hmm. would they be dominated? Would every bridge, would every church, would every ranch be owned by slavers? Mm. Or would free people from the North, free white people from the North, had the opportunity to mm-hmm. manifest the American dream in these new territories? That is what was in contention. Mm-hmm. The Confederacy, although it wasn't the total blame for slavery, as I said, did stand for the inequality of men, particularly those that were descendants from Africa. They believed that these people from Africa were inferior, that white Protestants in America were superior, and these people from Africa were, by God's plan, destined to be in a condition of servitude to white people and to remain in bondage. Now, however you feel about that, that's beside the point. Okay, civilization allowed people to feel like that at the time, mm-hmm. and they did. Mm-hmm. All right? So they formed a Confederate government, and all you need to do is go read the Cornerstone speech by Alexander Stevens, who is the vice president of the Confederacy, where he outlines exactly what the Confederates stand for. Their constitution, the difference was between their constitution and the original U.S. Constitution, and it's right there. Okay, so I'm not making this up. This isn't my belief. That is what the Confederate flag represented. The original Confederate flag stood for the Confederate States of America that had this philosophy. Now, any current diluted interpretation of this flag is just a derivative of the original meaning of what this flag represented. Mm-hmm. Now, we can go along all day about that. Mm-hmm. But those of us that have experienced the use and display of that flag to represent inequality and injustice, namely hate groups, you know, white supremacist groups that carry the flag, people in more modern times that see that association simply related easily to the original concept, which was the Confederate States. Now, what I did learn that I needed to do as Frederick Douglass is address that idea, because one complication about me being Douglass and doing most of my work primarily in the South, mm-hmm. where these battle reenactment festivals that I attend are by and large majority supported by Confederate mm-hmm. enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. They're proud of their heritage mm-hmm. as Confederates. So I have to try to sort out, well, how can this mm-hmm. be? You know, mm-hmm. what I've learned is that many of these people are proud to be Southerners. And they should be proud of being Southerners. The Southern way of life is distinguished from a life in New York, a life in California, or a life in Montana. Okay? They want to be proud of that, and they should be proud of that. But they don't know how to separate that from the ugliness and the evil of this institution of human bondage. Mm-hmm. And a whole lot of them were deeply troubled. I've had more than once grown men crying on my shoulders when I'm dressed out as Douglass, because they feel relief that I can see understanding of them being proud of who they are, but not wanting to be associated with that, the stigma mm-hmm. of that evil. Mm-hmm. And the way I do it is, first I talk about civilization, and then I talk about humanity, and then I talk about the triumph of this nation mm-hmm. as we are today. Mm-hmm. And because the Civil War turned out the way it did, the Union was restored, and we're one of the most powerful nation states on the planet. because Lincoln was right. And what he went to war to do turned out to be the way it needed to be. And that can be understood today as well as it was understood by Douglas in his time. So what I say is we must recognize a universal value for human beings on the planet. Mm-hmm. And with that, we can proceed. And here America can be the leader. We can proceed with all the technology that has involved in civilized man, medical technology, scientific technology, economic and sociological philosophies, everything that we know attributes to quality civilization, if that can be applied to a universal definition for human life, we'll have a better planet.
And it's been our pleasure to have you with us, John. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
So there you have a conversation with John Anderson portraying Frederick Douglass from back in 2016. It's our practice to bring you the history of Black Americans and their contributions to our community. You stay with me. We've got more coming up after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Welcome back to the second hour, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, featuring the famous, remarkable, talented, genius producer, Carl. You know that Carl is predominantly a Scandinavian name. I know that because Carl gave me a beautiful gift. He gave me this pound of coffee from Sweden, imported it was. Anyway, Carl is a remarkable person and contributes sizably to what otherwise would just be me sort of mishmashing my way through these various conversations. So it's always a challenge. I appreciate that, and I sympathize, and I apologize for making it even more difficult for you to listen. Consider who you're dealing with here, friend. But in these days, I find myself more and more appreciative of people who know exactly what they want to say and the timeliness of their remarks. Some of the people that you're familiar with that have been with us recently come into that. You know, they come with that capability. And I think of Commissioner Matlow. Jeremy has been on the show several times. And my interest in his comments really have to do with this business of trying to find that greatest good for the greatest number of people over the greatest period of time. And so his criticisms of the direction that county and city commissioners have taken in granting Doak Campbell Stadium repairs, you know, $27 million, you know, in its final analysis, I mean, $20 million and then another $7 in debt management raised the ire of many, including five of those commissioners that voted against it. And not all of them politically aligned, but they just kind of set politics aside, I think, and looked more sternly at where we could best invest that money, when in fact, you know, the whole premise with blueprint money was to try to better not just a certain number of people, but the greater good for the greater number of people. So here this last week, they had their skatable art park debut, right? And is that a worthwhile effort? Is that a good thing? Well, is it the greatest good? you know, Blueprint Intergovernmental Agency announced it. Here, I've got a press release in my hand. County and city government celebrating the new Skateable Art Park and Coal Chute Pond Trail. The two projects represent a $2.8 million investment in the South Side and expand recreational opportunities in the community. Well, okay, doesn't sound like a bad idea. But I don't know how many people in Leon County, if you took 187,000 people, would have any particular interest or even the athletic ability. I'm certainly not one of them, to take advantage of this lovely amenity that now is part of our landscape. Again, is it a bad idea? I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm saying, is there a better idea? And I really get that from a lot of the people who have been questioning the direction that Blueprint has taken. Then there's the other conversation that's going on in regard to how business is conducted. And, of course, Commissioner Matlow's recent filing is asking a judge to weigh in on this thing, and that has to do with whether or not conversations between the two principals involved in planning and deliberating over the work of Blueprint should be doing so with full transparency. Right. So that's going to continue to play out. Here's some encouraging news from the county regarding millage rates. No increase there. Reading here from the press release, to deliberately focus on the most fiscally responsible budget possible, the county held its first budget workshop. This was earlier in the week, back on Tuesday, this last Tuesday. As part of today's, of that workshop, I should say, the Board of County Commissioners voted to balance the county's preliminary budget without raising the millage rate. So they're going to continue to try to make good on promises for services. The proposed fiscal year totals $316.2 million. That's an increase of 7.5% from last year's budget. So how they're going to do that and not raise the millage rate? Well, that's some interesting accounting there, creative financing, I suppose. So no increases in the countywide or the EMS property tax rates. They're going to continue to fully support Leon County Sheriff's Office and all constitutional officers for their budget requests. Wow. The elections office will continue to have an increase in mail-in ballots and voting security, allocating millions of dollars in funding to support strategic long-term infrastructure investments that maintain core capital assets. This is all part of the county's fiscal budget as it's laid out here for us. And I'm giving you the high points. They're going to allocate funds to address food insecurity and leverage partnerships with Second Harvest of the Big Bend by increasing access to food through a mobile pantry. I've got some ideas about that, too. I won't take time here at the moment, but spending the weekend up in Atlanta, as we did recently, they have several programs up there that have been in particularly successful, and we're going to dig into that. Lots of ways in which you can provide low-cost food at various neighborhoods through a network of markets and grocery stores and such. As I say, we'll not get into that at the moment. So the county is going to continue to press on to get this all worked out, and we have this from the county administrator, Vincent Long. With the continued leadership of the board, the dedication of our talented staff, the active engagement of citizens, Leon County continues to be as well positioned as any organization to meet the current and foreseeable challenges and opportunities facing our organization and the community. All right, so the budget reflects the community's pressing needs as well as the board's longer term fiscal policies. Based on the results of the workshop, the board established a tentative countywide millage and emergency medical services municipal services taxing unit rates at their July 12th meeting. You're going to have an opportunity to provide input. You can weigh in on this. The first public hearing will come up this September, Tuesday the 13th, 6 p.m. Commission Chambers on the fifth floor. We'll talk to you more about that as that time approaches. So here we are going into this next segment with Dr. Atira Charles, someone who we have had on the show prior. In fact, this is a prior conversation. It fits nicely with our interests in self-awareness and development in the face of what can be formidably opposing forces. And how is it that individually and even collectively we can rise up to the occasion and find ourselves pursuing those things that are important to us? How do we go about discovering more of who we really are and what we're worth and why we're here? Stay with me.
June 1776, Philadelphia. The youngest delegate to the Second Continental Congress is appointed by committee to begin the drafting of a document that would declare the vision and intentions of this Congress. Inspired by the Enlightenment ideals of individualism and liberty, this young delegate from Virginia continued the painstaking process through several drafts before presenting the final version, which stands today as an enduring statement of human rights. The man was Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the Declaration of Independence. Celebrating America's quest for freedom, this message brought to you by Witten Glass on South Monroe, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Mahan Animal Clinic, special people and special care on Mahan Drive just east of Weems Road and on the web at mahananimalclinic.com. And Seller's Tile on Capitol Circle Northeast for the best design ideas and the highest quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
We're back, and I'm glad that you've stayed with me because you're about to participate in what turned out to be a remarkably poignant conversation from now 6 years ago. Let's listen, Dr. Atira Charles.
So once we have that stillness moment and once we reflect, we then have to be honest, right? And this is the most difficult part of the process because I always say we have to hold up the metaphorical mirror and look in and be okay with what we see and understand that if we see some blemishes or if we see some challenges or if we see some things that don't make us feel good, we have to still value that information and that message the same way that we value the things that make us feel good about ourselves. And that's honestly the process of vulnerability that is the most difficult.
And why is that most difficult, do you think?
So psychological theory will say that as humans, we have a hedonistic quality, right? We like to feel good. We like to do things that make us feel good. Mm. We like to do things that make us believe that we are good, right? And then ego gets involved there as well. And not ego in the layman's term, negative, you know, view, but just our concept of self, yeah. You know,
and protecting
and
self.
Yeah. And so by not being vulnerable and not being transparent, that's actually self-protective, but it's self-protective to a fault.
Right.
Right.
So those things that we might say are sort of natural for us
exactly.
can really keep us from.
We're battling a psychological
life.
Tendency, yeah. right?
Yeah.
And in battling a psychological tendency or even a behavioral tendency, that's difficult because now what we're really talking about is almost rewriting our code.
And
right?
that must be even more difficult for those who have been traumatized, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Because when even if someone lives a life that has more high times than low times, life is rough and tough, right?
Yeah.
So when you think about having more valleys than peaks, there's more to deal with there, right? Mm. And that's where that comes
from. I was reading a Facebook post from a friend who said that her husband hadn't spoken to his mother in over 35 years,
wow.
kind of thing, and didn't want to have any relationship with her.
Mm-hmm.
And she was reporting this to us, which in and of itself is sort of curious to me, that we will reveal the most intimate details to our lives to people that we don't know.
Right.
But if someone were to walk up to us on the street and ask us those kinds of intimate questions, we'd be offended.
Right. Well, it's because no matter what, if we have a set of emotions that is building up and brewing, it's going to come out, right? Mm-hmm. We only have a certain human capacity, right?
So she took the opportunity to tell us about this. I'm not sure he was in on that.
I was going to say, I'm not sure how he felt about it, but, you know.
She did report.
It was
that
cathartic for her, I guess.
The point of her posting was that he'd made this effort to make a phone call to his mother, mm-hmm. and left her a voicemail message.
Wow.
So she said, okay, it's a start. And some folks, of course, were chiming in about, hey, that's great and all. And it reminded me of this idea that resentment is the poison you drink to yourself to try to get even with somebody else.
Oh, that's an interesting thought.
You know, so if I allow bitterness or unforgiveness to remain, then this ability to be less inhibited, to be more vulnerable, to open up and experience gratitude,
right,
becomes even more difficult, right?
And one of the challenges with vulnerability, one of the things we have to become aware of, is there's always going to be a peanut gallery that has an opinion, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have to become better filters of the peanut galleries in our lives as well. And when we think about social media creates this.
There's a lot of nuts out there.
Well, social media creates this false sense of community or interaction sometimes, right? Yeah. So I love Facebook. I love Instagram. I love to be able to share pictures, share stories, have people engage in my life that just by time, space, and location don't have a front row view, right? It allows me to build relationships with people that just time and space has created, you know, distance with. Yeah. So I do believe that there's strong value, and I'm pro social media, but it's like anything has another side, right?
Yeah.
I think that social media for some allows people to live in this insulated space internally, but kind of create this facade of external interaction. Mm. And that can be dangerous because it can almost become a little bit delusional.
Honestly, I don't see there. I agree with that. And I don't see that being much different than what we often will do when we go to some group that we're a part of, but we never really get honest with that group. It could be a Sunday morning, it could be a Wednesday night group, or whatever we're doing, maybe the people at work. We just don't get honest, do we?
Yeah.
Remove the mask, I think you might say.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I have a new project that I'm working on called The Mask Project, which talks about the emotional and psychological masks that we wear every day in our personal life and in our work lives. And I like to use the hashtag unmasked, right? UNMASKED, because we have to take the masks off at some point, right? Mm-hmm. So masks can be, the metaphorical mask, I'll call it, can be protective, right? Mm-hmm. It can also insulate us, but it can also be strategic. Right. So a lot of times we think about a mask as a negative thing. Oh, you're covering, you're hiding. Oh, you're shamed. No, not necessarily. I may just be aware enough to reflect and realize that in this moment, in this situation, in this circumstance, I need to wear it. But one of the challenges is that people can sometimes get so used to the rat race of wearing all of these different masks that they don't have the moments to take it off and reflect and kind of get back in touch with their core authentic self.
And would you say, too, that in being that way and in being in touch with your core self, if you have at least one other or maybe a core group that knows that core, that knows that real you, that's helpful, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Research will support, and even anecdotally, social support systems matter. But you have to make sure that the sources of your social support are authentic as well and can interact with you in that transparent and in that vulnerable way, because it's an exchange. If I share everything with you, but then you don't share anything with me, in our next interaction, I'm going to be more guarded. But if I share with you and then you share with me, now there's trust that's built, right? And understand that we have an equal vested interest in this vulnerability exchange.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, talking with Dr. Atira Charles and having a great conversation here about those things that you and I do with our own lives and with those around us who are, we'll say, our intimate others, our significant others, how well we can embrace the idea of being grateful, so allowing gratitude to work within us, bring us past those masks that we sometimes wear for good reason, but allow us to have that sort of genuine intimacy with the people who matter most.
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers' spacious showroom. Conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we're listening to a conversation with Atira Charles, professor at Florida A&M, recorded some many years ago now, back in 2014. And if you've just joined us, don't worry, you'll want to stay tuned, because there's a whole lot more that this woman has to share with us about overcoming fear, dealing with anxieties, dealing with the kinds of stresses that we experience, you know, in everyday circumstances. And certainly on this occasion, when we are trying to step back just a bit, step away from the fray of this onslaught that has been thrust upon us, we can take pause, we can take stock of what has been done for us and who we really are, in the acknowledgement of and the declaration of, well, here we have a kind of dying to the things that we've held on to, that we've put our trust in, our hopes for, whether it's health, employment, income, even relationships that may be stressed out at this point. I mean, we have been kind of locked up with each other for an extended period of time. You know, my dog is just really not very happy with me right now. And my cat won't even talk to me anymore, so forget about it. Well, Dr. Charles has some advice for me and for you. An interesting point of departure in which she identifies us best able to apply this truth in a moment of silence, getting real quiet, you know, settle down. So this idea of just quieting ourselves, how do you do that? Well, it wouldn't hurt to turn off the news for a little while. You know, close up your Facebook page. In fact, just put your phone in a drawer somewhere. You know, wherever you can go, whatever you need to do to get alone, to get quiet, that's a good start. And Dr. Charles will do her part in helping us walk further down that path as we listen to her here in this next segment. And what's remarkable to me is that that quietness is then the kind of foundation for everything else that follows. It's a remarkable process. Let's take a listen.
The way I think about it, I was raised in a family where I knew from a very young age that God mattered and God controlled things in my life. And so through life, you know, of course, there's different religious views and values and beliefs that we all share around the world.
Right.
But for me, understanding that God matters, that God influences my life, that gratitude matters, and that there are good things to do in the world and bad things to do in the world, and that I err on the side of good, right?
Why does gratitude matter?
So for me in my life, gratitude has been directly connected to all of the blessings that I've received. You know, some of my friends make a joke and say, Tira, you have a charmed life. You know, things just kind of happen for you. They kind of work out. And I don't believe that it is random. I believe that God has a vision for my life. And I'm glad that my parents were able to instill in me an awareness, right, of that connection to be able to walk in a way that aligns with what I believe to be that vision and purpose. Mm-hmm. And here's the interesting thing. The clarity I'm speaking about that with now, of course, is not the clarity that I've had through life. But at this point now, I have more clarity in the fact that God has me here to utilize my voice to help people understand themselves. Mm-hmm. And I believe that that's transformative, not just for people, but for me as a person, because no matter whether I'm teaching in a classroom or I'm speaking at an event or I'm at a boardroom at a corporation, I'm able to utilize my voice and my thoughts to transform and change for the good. Mm-hmm. And that feels great.
And when you see those changes happening, is it often that people will say back to you, man, this is working. This is changing my life.
Here. And honestly, that's the feedback that has allowed me to have the clarity. Because for a long time it was, I just went and got my PhD in organizational behavior. And yeah, I'm kind of intuitive and I give good advice, right? I would minimize it down just kind of what I do on a day to day. But I'm much more strategic and clear about the fact that that's the gift I have and that I need to use it purposefully.
So your message then to me is, Brian, find where it is that you are gifted and go with it.
Exactly. And the universe, people, society, the environment, the social landscape, whatever language we want to use, communicates back to us. But in order for us to get the message, we have to have our ears open, right? Or even our hearts open or our minds open.
Okay, now that's key, because so many times when I try to share with folks, their ears aren't open, right?
Right.
How does a person come to that? What opens us up to be able to receive that information?
So the first thing that opens us up is taking the moment to be still, right? We have to,
and that's a choice.
Right, exactly. We have to just stop sometimes, be still, and have that self-talk and say, self, what do I need to become aware of right now? Do I need to become aware of aspects of myself? Do I need to become aware of things that are going on in my environment? And that level of awareness allows us to then reflect and strategize, right, on what direction and what steps we're interested in taking.
Okay. So once I've done that, and that sounds like it's not a retreat somewhere in
Tibet. Oh, my gosh, no.
That's
it's just a daily day. It's a daily thing. I always tell when I'm doing speaking events, I said, you know what? It always feels good in this one-hour session, right? Or we can even say in this one-hour radio show. It feels good. I heard it. I feel pumped up. I feel empowered. And then we just keep moving on with the rat race. What we have to do is schedule time into our day to have these reflective self moments, whether that is when you first wake up in the morning, whether it's what I like to call pillow talk, when you're just laying there by yourself before you fall asleep, whether it's that random moment that you're sitting in the car at lunchtime, right? You have to just take the moment to decompress and be able to hear, right? And you can hear others, you can hear yourself.
So if we're not doing that, then we're going to run back to get pumped up again.
Right.
So I think that's why a lot of people go to church, because they have their weekly fix where they get kind of inspired and pumped up, and then they just go back to the next 6 days of, ugh.
Well, what I always like to say is that aside from the fact that it's not a destination and it's a journey and a process, we have to be very clear about the fact that sometimes we need help, right? So this process of self-awareness and self-reflection and self-knowledge, it's not easy on your own, right? So prompting helps. That's why when we read certain books, it helps guide us. When we go to church, it helps guide us. When we go to classes, right, it helps to guide us. When we just have coffee with our friends at lunchtime, right, it helps to guide us and think through certain aspects of things that make us go,
okay, so it can be helpful to have that support, but unless we are willing
to do it outside, exactly,
there's no chance.
We have to have an active role in it.
It's not going
to
stick.
If only it's an external prompt that makes you think about that, that's the challenge, right? So we have to become better monitors of ourselves to stop and do it ourselves, sometimes.
Okay, so we started out by saying that gratitude is a very powerful thing in our lives.
Exactly.
To know that experience or to experience the benefit of gratitude, you're saying the first thing you have to do is get quiet.
Get quiet.
And listen.
Right. Because a lot of times people think that God isn't working in their life, that their own individual efforts are not paying off with rewards. But sometimes we have to have those moments of still to even see, oh, wow, it was here and I just didn't see it. It was said and communicated. I just didn't hear it, you know, and that's where that comes in.
And there's so many references to that in history. Even in scripture where you see people who come to an awareness and it was there in front of them all the time.
It was there in front of them all the time.
The circumstances as such are beyond any one individual's ability to control the general outcome. And that part of it is what is probably more disturbing to us than anything else, the sense of being out of control. Well, guess what? What we've been learning here from Atira Charles is that the stuff that's really, really important in our lives that we are in control of, that we can control within our grasp, that's where we need to focus. That's where we can overcome the anxieties. Folks, stay with me. I've got one more segment with Dr. Charles. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio. And you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are in the final segment of today's broadcast with all of this being presented to you with our deepest, most hopeful anticipation that you're going to find encouragement and refreshment. Well, at the moment, I want to bring us back to this conversation we're having with Dr. Atira Charles as we talk further about the business of realizing faith in actual terms, how it gets acted out in everyday circumstances. Let's listen.
The work that I do related to identity and self-awareness and how we manage that in our personal and especially our professional lives is something that I'm working on now. And so I'm working on the details and the content. But yes, the goal is to have it as an audiobook.
Yeah. Well, we had Dr. Cirio on earlier in the show today and actually pulled a segment of another conversation we had had with him focused on this question about the Ebola virus.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I did that, particularly for today's show, is to put that in the context of what you and I are talking about, whereby we find ourselves beset with all kinds of fear and anxieties and stresses, whether they're workplace related. Think about this. When I was a young man, I never thought if I go to work today, I could get shot.
Right.
Or somebody might go off and decide to come in and start killing people,
right,
whether at my school or my place of work. And when I think about what you shared with us in the first hour, talking about this isolation, there's no oxygen getting to me, right?
Right.
So I just sort of implode. I mean, I think about this 14-year-old up there in
so
the
sad.
Seattle area.
So sad.
That's my hometown. I know those people up there. I mean, you might as well have set off an atomic bomb.
And here's the interesting thing with that story. All of the anecdotes about the child are that he was a popular kid, a friendly kid. Everybody loved him, right? So when we think about wearing a mask, right? Paul Laurence Dunbar has a poem that I love that motivates a lot of the work that I do. And the beginning of the poem is, we wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. You know, and people are not always aware or privy to what's going on the inside, which is why it's important for all of us to at least have those self-reflective moments so that we can more accurately communicate to the people in our world, I'm afraid. I'm ashamed. I have fear. I'm sad. I'm angry. I'm mad. And I think it's imperative that we do that as adults, because we have to teach our children to do so.
That it's okay.
That it's okay, because we're in a society where image matters so much, and presentation of self does not have to be authentic, right? Just kind of connecting to media and entertainment and things of that nature.
And the outcry that has come about with Jameis Winston, to me, illustrates how sensitive that whole presentation of self is when we idolize somebody who, after all, is flesh and blood. But, oh, wait a minute, Brian. He's our star quarterback. Right. He has to live at a different standard.
And here's the challenge with that, right? We have these expectations of others, but are unclear on the expectations we set for ourselves. And I think we have a tendency to, and it's a self-serving bias, right? I mean, research supports this, that we have a tendency to attribute failures to others and successes to ourselves. Hmm. But the challenge with that, just kind of keeping it with the youth conversation, because at the end of the day, he's a star quarterback, but he's a young man who was a teenager when he came into everybody's lives.
Yeah.
The expectation that he has gone through a process of self-reflection and proper impression management is unfair, because for those
unrealistic,
it's unfair if he has not been given those tools. Because the reality is most people have not been given those tools. There's just a different lens and microscope on him, and that's not to minimize any of some of the behaviors that he should be managing more effectively.
Right.
But at the end of the day, he is a young man that is finding himself under the microscope and scrutiny of the world, and that's not easy.
To me, it supports your observation with the 14-year-old kid who decides to take aim, right?
Right.
What was it that was so fractured? There was this sort of schism, this outward self that is presented. That's the one we want to see. That's the one we're going to reward. Oh, you can throw
because that's also the one that makes us feel good about ourselves.
There you go.
Right.
And so I dare say that when Mr. Winston was being recruited for his current occupation, I would be shocked to find out that anybody sat him down and said, well, now let's talk about you. You know, let's find out what you value in life and how honest are you with yourself and what masks do you wear? No, they found out that this guy was an amazing football player.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they put their marker. That's what they said they wanted. They got that.
Right.
And I even said to Lynn Wicker, she was on the show here a couple of weeks ago, I said, you know, he went out and did exactly what we asked him to do. Win a frickin' championship. And he,
right.
You know, and he's over here acting out. And those are undesirable behaviors. And you've said it's not about the behavior. It's about what are we doing to support this guy and walk with him and get him through this.
And not just him, right? Our community as a whole.
Yeah.
Our community as a whole. Because all of us have thoughts and all of us have behaviors and emotions that we don't share with the world, right?
Right.
Everybody has something that needs some management.
Yeah.
And I think that we have to be very careful of our level of being critical of others without being compassionate about their experience and their lived experience.
And see, to me, that's the level of hypocrisy that comes into play.
Oh, totally.
Yeah? Because we didn't run this guy through a personality inventory and decide, you know what, even though this guy can throw a football like there's no tomorrow, we're just not interested. No, we said, are you kidding?
But
this guy will make us a ton of cash. You know?
Right. People are also uncomfortable with having the conversation, period, right?
Yeah.
Because if people aren't able to have the conversation with themselves, how can they be stewards of the conversation with others, you know? And that's why in the classroom, I mean, my students always say, you know, Dr. C, you're always standing on some box telling us about something about ourselves. This isn't in the chapter. And I say, you're right. It's not in the chapter, but it's in your life, right?
You are the chapter.
Exactly. And I tell them, I said, I could care less if you retain 5 out of 7 versus 7 out of 7 concepts. But if you understand this life lesson that we are talking about right now, you will be better off for it.
Folks, I hope that you have enjoyed today's broadcast, and tell you that it is remarkably satisfying for all of us to think that there's even one person, maybe it's you, listening right now, and you have found in this show today something of encouragement, some insight, a refreshment, a reaffirmation of the things that you know in your heart are really true. Thanks for being with me today. You know that we're the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment right here in Tallahassee, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat. You can find Moose Magnificat online, moosemagnificat.com, streaming radio to the world, bringing you the sound of Tallahassee, all local musicians playing their original songs. That is the work of Moose Magnificat. Our executive producer is the very talented, very loyal, and devoted Carl Cerny. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
In 1945, Jack Whidden started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now over 75 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whidden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whidden because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whidden Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whidden wanted, and it's been the Whidden way of doing business for over 75 years. Whidden Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whidden Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or whittinglass.com.